Religious liberty is an issue I think that we as Christians need to get out in front of.
Mark Hemingway talking about his joint presentation at the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Whether it's willful or simple ignorance, the media have badly misrepresented this issue. It is also vital that all Americans understand just how foundational religious liberty and freedom of conscience are to the preservation of all American freedoms. And this is something that even those Americans who aren't religious should understand and agree with. I also happen to believe that we as Lutherans, with our understanding of Two Kingdoms theology, are in an excellent position to be the explainers and ambassadors of this issue.
You can meet and hear Mark and Molly Hemingway making the case for religious liberty at the Fall Making the Case Conference Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Registration is $120. Child care is free. Find out more and register at IssuesETC.org or call 618-223-8385.
In a time of kings and princes, power was in the hands of the few. Then, one man broke through, challenging an empire with little more than an idea. His story would engage millions and inspire generations in the quest for truth. His name, Martin Luther.
That is the trailer for the PBS film Martin Luther, The Idea That Changed the World. Some of the press that was released around the film also said this movement, the Protestant Reformation, changed Western culture at its core, sparking the drive toward individualism, freedom of religion, women's rights, separation of church and state, and even free public education. Without the Reformation, there would have been no Pilgrims, no Puritans, no America in the way that we know it. That's how the film is described in part by PBS, the producer of the film on Martin Luther and the Reformation. Is that a good description? Does it miss something? And does it take Luther farther than even Luther and the Reformation would have gone? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live this Tuesday afternoon, September the 19th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to do a little critique and review of the film Martin Luther, The Idea That Changed the World, with Dr. Cameron McKenzie, author of the forthcoming book, The Reformation. After that, we're going to spend some time with Pastor Peter Burfeind describing the left and woke ideology. You've heard people talk about how they are now woke. What does that mean? And what is the ideology behind it? Then we're going to spend some time with Pastor Tom Baker, our regular feature, teaching a Sunday school lesson. Today, we'll be teaching about Elijah and the prophets of Baal in 1 Kings chapter 18. You can join us with questions or comments over the course of the next 2 hours. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org. We're interested in your take on Martin Luther, The Idea That Changed the World as well, if you watch that PBS film. Our Twitter address, @IssuesETC, and the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. You can also leave your comments and your questions about the Martin Luther PBS film at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/IssuesETC. Facebook.com/IssuesETC. Joining us to talk about the film Martin Luther, The Idea That Changed the World, Dr. Cameron McKenzie. He's a regular guest professor and chairman of the Department of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, author of the forthcoming book, The Reformation. Dr. McKenzie, welcome back.
Well, Todd, thanks for having me. I always enjoy being here.
Here it is again. This is the PBS show description. In October 31st of that year, a penniless monk named Martin Luther sparked the revolution that changed everything. He had no army. In fact, he preached nonviolence so powerfully that 400 years later, Michael King would change his name to Martin Luther King to show solidarity with the original movement. This movement, the Protestant Reformation, changed Western culture at its core, sparking the drive toward individualism, freedom of religion, women's rights, separation of church and state, and even free public education. What do you make of that description of Luther and the quote-unquote movement of which he was so much a part in the 16th century?
Well, it really doesn't describe Martin Luther and the Reformation that he sought to promote and ended up effecting. You could maybe make the argument that Luther's success in challenging the Roman Church and the establishment of state churches in German territories and around Europe kind of got the ball rolling for some of these other things. but the other things simply don't describe Martin Luther, his own personal beliefs or attitudes, or what he was hoping for when he, you know, posted those 95 theses and the Reformation began.
Then let's talk a bit about the film itself. You watched it. What are the most positive aspects of Martin Luther, the idea that changed the world, that you found?
Well, you know, these movies of Luther, I can think about four or five of them since I was a kid, and there are probably more that I'm not remembering, have their strengths and weaknesses. Sometimes as movies, you can say, wow, that was really engaging. Or sometimes you can say that in terms of its presentation of Luther's theology, it was either better or worse than some other presentation. Well, I would give this particular presentation okay marks for the presentation of Luther's theology. I think it got it was pretty accurate in describing Luther's personal quest for a gracious God. I think the movie put it, how can I be good enough? And also then the failure of the medieval church to answer that question for Luther in such a way that he found comfort and consolation. And then also the development of Luther's scriptural principle, going to the Bible, and then finally using the Bible to challenge church authorities. And also the notion that he ultimately found his comfort and consolation in Christ, and that faith in Christ was key to his understanding of how one received God's blessings, God's promises. So, you know, I think in the big outline of Luther's theology, you wouldn't say, wow, they got that wrong, or that just wasn't correct. So, you know, that for me, that was, well, I'll come back to that, but that's a positive thing if you don't get it wrong. I thought also that, you know, the way they, the words that were chosen were all words that Luther either said or wrote. I thought they did a pretty nice job of dressing the actors, making it look 16th century-ish. If you kind of look at pictures of the time and the stuff that the people were wearing, I thought that was good. I thought it moved relatively quickly for being a documentary type rather than dramatic reenactment exclusively. It moved pretty well. I thought the commentators, maybe there were too many of them, but they shed some light on the significance of what it is that the film was showing. So those were all positive things that I could say about the movie.
Insofar as we can, because of course history is not autobiography, Luther certainly isn't that way, but we look back on figures of history and we can only surmise things about them personally or their personality. How do you think it captured the personality, the famous complicated personality of Martin Luther?
Well, maybe a little too bland. I think it seems to me that Luther's personality was bigger than life, and I'm not sure that that came through in the movie. Just I'm just not sure that the actor kind of expressed the degree of emotion that I would have expected from a film regarding Martin Luther. So again, I wouldn't say bad, wrong, but also not exceptional, and maybe just a little too bland a presentation of Martin Luther.
Then let's talk about your, perhaps, if you were asked by a student, and certainly you would be, given your place in the history classroom.
Yeah, probably have been.
what's your biggest critique? If you had to say, this was either blatant, conspicuously absent, or wrong, what would be your biggest critique?
Yeah, I think most people who know Luther will agree with me on this, that our Lord Jesus Christ was not featured nearly so much as he should have been in Luther's theology. He's not absent, but he's certainly not emphasized. And the best illustration of that, though I think it's all over the film, but the best illustration of that is right at the end, in the conclusion, when they are explicitly answering the question, well, what is this idea that changed the world? And the answer that the movie gives explicitly is that God forgives. But that's really inadequate. In Luther's theology, God forgives on account of Jesus Christ. And it's our Lord Jesus Christ who does not have nearly so much prominence in this film as he does in Luther's theology. I'll give you an example of that. One of the great events in Luther's personal development is an episode that we call the Tower Experience, on account of the fact that Luther describes it as having taken place in the tower of the Augustinian monastery in Wittenberg. Well, this Tower Experience, which is in the film, comes when Luther is wrestling with Romans 1, 16 and 17, in which St. Paul talks about the righteousness of God, and Luther thinks that the righteousness of God is always to be understood as the demands of God upon human beings for holiness, and he's frustrated because he thinks that Paul is saying in the gospel that's what you get, more law, more demands, measure up to holiness. But then finally, Luther reads that phrase in its context in Romans 1, and it's the righteousness of God is revealed in the gospel, for there it's written as the just will live by faith. And in the movie, Luther is really excited about this. He understands this as by faith alone, without works, etc., and it goes on and on and on. But it's not until the next scene in which Luther is preaching that finally you hear him say, Jesus Christ has done enough. Jesus Christ has done what was necessary. So people could easily get the wrong impression that it's simply the activity of faith that Luther was so thrilled about. But they should know that for Luther, it's the object of faith that saves, not the activity of faith, but the object of faith. And you can describe that as Jesus, our faith in our Lord and his saving work, or as Luther liked to describe it in those early years, as faith in the promises of God, the promise of forgiveness for the sake of Christ. And that central idea, message of the Christian religion, as Luther preached it, is something that is not particularly prominent in the movie at all, and especially at the end when you're summarizing this whole thing as the great idea to reduce it simply to God forgives without mentioning Jesus. That's really a significant omission that, for me, raises never show the movie, but if I were a pastor and showing it, I'd make sure that I'd point that out when all was said and done.
Is it safe to say that you don't feel Luther's theology, and especially the place of his theology in what we call the Reformation, was adequately portrayed?
Well, yeah, I guess that would be the way of putting it. It's not inaccurate, but it's not adequate. I think they do a good job of showing that Luther is motivated by these things, but I just miss the gospel heart of Luther's Christianity.
Were there any, as a historian, I know you guys are kind of detail-oriented, was there anything that you would, if you had a chance to go back, that you'd say, okay, I'd change this and I'd change that, besides what I want to discuss in a few minutes, which is some of the omissions, any kind of details that kind of, oh, okay, they botched that one?
Well, as I said, I think the movie was fine. I do think they should have spent more money on sets. Costumes were good. I don't think the sets were very good. The classroom, for example, that they depict, it's got all those curtains around the room blocking out the sunlight. Those look like pretty modern curtains. They didn't look like something from the 16th century, and I'm not sure they would have wasted that much cloth for that particular purpose. It looks like there was only one road in Germany. Whenever they showed a road, it seemed like it was the same road. When Luther's preaching, you've got people sitting in pews. You've got lay people sitting in the choir area where the clergy would have been. So I didn't think that was a very good set. So I think the sets could have been better. I did like the blacksmith shop at the beginning. I thought that was pretty good. So that's one of the places where I think there's a little deficiency. If I had been doing this and had all the resources in the world, and I'm sure they didn't, but if I had, I would have done something a little bit more authentic with the music. You know, Luther and the Reformation is famous for the production of music and hymns and so forth. Well, we got one hymn that was A Mighty Fortress. Okay, that's understandable. But we used a more modern version of it. And what I mean by that is the music, it really wasn't 16th century music. It was music that was maybe like 17th or 18th century music. So those are a couple of things that come to mind. If I were doing the entire life, I always like to, after the 95 Theses, I always like to include the Heidelberg Disputation, because whereas the 95 Theses aren't particularly Lutheran in their content, about 6 months later, Luther is at Heidelberg representing his monastic order, and there he presents theses that do include things like distinction between law and gospel, theology of the cross, and other concepts that are really kind of more Lutheran. And I like, when I'm doing Luther's biography, I always like to include the Heidelberg Disputation. And of course, and again, they don't have time for this, but the whole Schmalkald League and the Schmalkald Articles and that kind of great stuff in the 1530s really kind of got shortchanged. So, you know, omissions are always easy to point to as things that either a book or a movie don't include. But those are some of the ones that I seem to notice as I was watching the movie.
Dr. Cameron McKenzie is our guest. We're talking about the film Martin Luther, The Idea That Changed the World. He's professor and chairman of the Department of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, author of the forthcoming book, The Reformation. We'll be right back, and we'll talk about the reference to the Reformation as a movement, what Dr. McKenzie thinks about that particular term.
We don't know anything about this formerly blind and mute man.
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
What we do know is what Jesus did for him. And what Jesus did for that man, he is doing now for you.
Morning Chapel from Kramer Chapel. Live, weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific, at issuesetc.org.
I believe in God the Father Almighty. Millions confess the great creeds of the church each week. But why? Learn more about Christian creeds and Lutheran confessions this month in The Lutheran Witness. Get 6 issues of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's premier magazine for only $6.99 when you visit cph.org/try-Lutheran-witness. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective. cph.org/try-Lutheran-witness.
Real Reformation Radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
When pastors talk about us, they call us ad crucem. When laity mention us, they speak of ad crucem. When non-Lutherans address us, they say ADC Rucam. But no matter how you say it, ad crucem is the place to go for greeting cards, artwork, jewelry, ornaments, housewares, church certificates, church banners, and all your gift buying needs. Visit adcrucem.com, confessing the faith through art and word. ADCRUCEM.com.
When a Christian woman is critical of her own flesh, she holds her Creator in contempt.
Rose Adel, from her new book, Ladylike, Living Biblically.
Our Heavenly Father knit us together in the womb. He did not do a bad job. We are fearfully and wonderfully made. Psalm 139:14. That goes for everyone, including the one who thinks she's the ugliest of them all.
You can purchase and download Concordia Publishing House's new audiobook, Ladylike, Living Biblically, at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're reviewing and critiquing the film from PBS, Martin Luther, The Idea That Changed the World. Dr. Cameron McKenzie of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, is our guest. Dr. McKenzie, I was curious what you think about this, because the Reformation is commonly referred to as a movement. It's kind of, that's the way we talk nowadays. But movements tend to be a kind of a vague thing, and a movement makes it sound, I think, probably like much more modern thing than it really was at the time. What do you think of referring to the Reformation, as does PBS here, as a movement?
I agree with you that it's a word that is more typical of our times than it would have been in the 16th century. Of course, in a way, it's understandable. PBS wants people to watch this, and unless they use a few things that people are familiar with, they're not going to watch. But one of the dangers, and I think that's true with this movie, is that you end up making somebody like Luther too much like us. One of the things that I probably should have mentioned earlier is Luther. Well, I mean, you can think of him as much medieval as he is modern, maybe even more medieval than he is modern. And one of the things that does not come out in this movie is Luther's strong belief in a personal devil who is active all over the place, including in his own life. Similarly, his belief that the world was coming to an end and he was living in the last times. That's hardly mentioned in the movie as well. So when you use kind of modern vocabulary, modern concepts, you're communicating more effectively. That's true. But maybe you are misleading people into thinking that Luther is preaching and is teaching, and those who followed him were really something more like today, political movements or social movements, than was really true in the 16th century, when for Luther, it's all about God's truth that saves, that will transform the lives of the people who believe it, but was not at all kind of this, for Luther again, a movement with all kinds of ramifications for politics, society, economics, from one part of Christendom to the next. I mean, that just wasn't what Luther was aiming at or thinking about.
Another thing we've tended to do with both Luther and the Reformation, this is one of my pet peeves of late, we tend to make it very individualistic to Luther, as though kind of in the process of him struggling with his own personal demons, the Reformation just happened to occur around him as a result of him and his own personal struggle. That's what I mean by individualizing the Reformation too much. And then the Reformation becomes so much about Luther's internal struggle and not about what I've come to refer to as his pastoral, much broader, much longer term concern for the people of God. What are your thoughts there?
Well, that's an interesting thought, and I think that movies in general, not just this last one, tend to do what you're talking about. Because Luther's story, especially those first years when you have him struggling in the monastery, you have the 95 Theses, you have the major leaders of the church all upset with him, then you have the Diet of Worms, and then you get Luther marrying and finally the Augsburg Confession. In all of those, but especially those first events, Luther's individual experience does loom very large. But what gets ignored, perhaps because it's not so dramatic, is how, especially after his return from the Wartburg, that Luther does start with his colleagues. Again, this is not, he's not doing this all by himself, but he's doing it with his colleagues at Wittenberg, others who've responded favorably in other places. He's doing it under the protection of the rulers of Saxony. And what they begin to do is to think and work for the spread of this gospel to the people in their charge, so that they will come to know God as he loves them in Jesus Christ. something that, from the perspective of Luther and others, wasn't happening prior to the Reformation, or it wasn't happening consistently and regularly prior to the Reformation. So yeah, it's a very multifaceted, heavily engaged by lots of people in addition to Martin Luther, for the sake of bringing to the fore what it is that God has actually done for us in Christ. So yeah, this pastoral aspect of the Reformation is something that does get obscured, primarily, I guess, because it's not nearly so dramatic as some of those events in Luther's life.
You expressed some concern about some people who either got short shrift or never appeared. Luther would have said that these men stood shoulder to shoulder with him in this. He would have probably not been able to talk about, especially later in life, about what happened during the Reformation without referencing these men. Who doesn't get enough or any screen time that probably should have?
Well, Philip Melanchthon gets a little screen time, especially when he falls ill and Luther is presented praying for him. But certainly Melanchthon has claimed to be a co-founder of the Reformation from a theological point of view, along with Martin Luther. Early on in the Reformation, he embraces the cause. He lectures on New Testament books like Romans and Colossians, works that later on get printed up. And when people ask, well, why didn't Luther ever write a commentary on Romans, you know, his favorite Pauline epistle? Well, the answer is because Melanchthon had done so. And then Melanchthon also writes the first Lutheran doctrine book, dogmatics book. Melanchthon writes three of the Lutheran confessions. So Melanchthon's contribution really is not spelled out in much detail. And then there are others. I mean, there's Bugenhagen, who's Luther's pastor. He's the man to whom Luther would make confession of his sins. And he's also an important reformer who leaves Wittenberg for months at a time, goes into Scandinavia, helps to spread the Reformation, the Lutheran Reformation there. There are others. There's Johannes Brentz in Württemberg and Schwäbisch Hall, and he's doing a great job of building the Reformation in that part of Germany. Then there's that wonderful character, Martin Bucer, who is kind of half Lutheran, half Reformed. I'm not sure he ever does really make up his mind, but he's really important as a reformer in Strasbourg. And then at the end of his life, he contributes to the Reformation in England. There are just lots of people who should be mentioned. And if you, now again, I know it's on Luther, but if you want to talk about what made Luther successful, you'd have to bring in all the rulers who embraced the cause, not only the electors of Saxony, but people like Philip of Hesse, who have interesting stories and interesting motivations. Henry VIII makes it in, but of course Henry VIII was no Lutheran. And here again, I might just mention the movie's failure to, or it's kind of rubbing off some of Luther's rough edges. You know, the movie points out that Luther did not go along with Henry's rationale for seeking a divorce from his first wife, Catherine of Aragon. The truth of the matter is that Luther did even more, in that he suggested that Henry commit bigamy rather than get a divorce. Now, I'm not endorsing that, but that's too is a part of Luther. Luther, the man, that makes him, I would say, somewhat different from Lutheran theologians today.
We'll take another break. When we come back, continue our conversation with Dr. Cameron McKenzie of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, author of the forthcoming book, The Reformation. We're talking about the film that many of you may have seen on PBS, Martin Luther, The Idea That Changed the World. When we come back, he's mentioned the princes, or the lack of the appearance of at least the German princes there. What about the film's depiction of the political circumstances at the time of the Reformation? Stay tuned.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
the 6th century. The 12th century. The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Emmanuel means God with us. God is with us at Emmanuel Lutheran Church and School at 1285 Main Street in Hamilton, Ohio, near Cincinnati. God is with us as we gather on Sunday at 8 and 10:45 a.m. for divine service. God with us in his word of forgiveness, with us in the waters of baptism, with us in the body and blood of Christ in Holy Communion, with us in the classrooms of our school and childcare, serving children from age 3 to 8th grade. Join us for worship or enroll your child in our Christ-centered day school. Find us at emmanuelhamilton.com.
Ever attended an Issues Etc. conference or any number of events that take place across the Synod and wondered why more people from your congregation aren't there? Then check out the special seminar package the CLCC is offering for the 500th anniversary. All you need so your circuit can prepare, promote, and present a seminar that will appeal to all the members of your congregation, provided for free by the CLCC. Just go to theclcc.org, theclcc.org, and click on the blue box or check us out on Facebook.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Resurrection Lutheran, Detroit, Michigan. Bethlehem Lutheran, Parma, Ohio. St. Paul's Lutheran, Lockport, Illinois. Faith Lutheran, Columbus, Indiana. Glory of Christ Lutheran, Plymouth, Minnesota. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Arnold, Missouri. Peace Lutheran, Sussex, Wisconsin. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Cedar Falls, Iowa. Zion Lutheran, Moberly, Missouri. And Elm Grove Lutheran, Elm Grove, Wisconsin. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the PBS film, Martin Luther, The Idea That Changed the World. Dr. Cameron McKenzie is our guest. You can join us with your questions and your comments if you saw the film on PBS and like to throw in your two cents or ask a question. 1-877-623-6943. 1-877-623-6943. Our email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. And our Facebook fan page where you can leave your questions or comments as well. Facebook.com/issuesetc. Send us a tweet @issuesetc. Dr. McKenzie, you had mentioned the princes and how even a cursory knowledge of the Reformation reveals that it is a political as well as a theological movement with respect to the civil authorities there. They have their own motivations, some of them deeply devout and devoted to Luther's theology. But how do you think it depicted the political aspect of the Reformation?
Well, from one perspective, it was okay. It talked about Luther's place in the Holy Roman Empire, and it described the Holy Roman Empire as this conglomeration of various states with the emperor at the head, and how the emperor reacted negatively to Luther, condemned Luther, but then wasn't able to follow through on enforcing that edict until after Luther was dead. So that was adequate, talking about, you know, Charles V's other challenges. So, for example, the Ottoman Turks, in addition to the Reformation. I do think any kind of full account of the Reformation is going to talk about the Reformation movement on the ground. Decisions for or against the Reformation were really made by political authorities far below the level of the emperor. So one of the first places that the Reformation grabbed hold was in the cities and towns. That's where the printing press was actually located, and then where the printing press could have the greatest impact, because that's where you had the greatest number of readers. Now, the movie couldn't bring this out very well, but when the Reformation began, if you looked at the total population within the Holy Roman Empire, probably only about 5 to 10% of the people could read. So no matter how many things Luther put into print, he put a lot of things in, most people weren't going to get the message that way. Readership was higher in the cities and towns. Maybe it goes up to like 30%. And since people read aloud, that would include a lot more people who were actually advantaged by these things being available in print in their cities and towns. But even there, where you could have like a critical mass of readers and their followers embracing Luther's ideas, usually what happened was that a preacher would embrace Luther's ideas, and he would popularize them through the pulpit, not by handing out pamphlets. And then at some point, the political authorities in those cities and towns would embrace the Reformation and say, well, we're going to start making the changes that are appropriate to the Reformation. Likewise, in the larger territories like Saxony or Hesse or any one of a dozen others, it would be the prince, the duke, the count, who would embrace the Reformation, and then he would adopt Reformation measures. Now, he didn't do it just in splendid isolation. He had counselors, advisors, other people in the aristocracy who did things with him, but they would make the decision, and then they would try to get preachers in the various churches preaching the Reformation. They would end up passing laws which made mandatory something like the Augsburg Confession as a statement of faith in their territories. So in many instances, the Reformation was a kind of a top-down sort of phenomenon in which local elites were making decisions regarding what people would hear from their pulpits and what they would be taught as a matter of religious truth. I might also add, and this is kind of one of my pet peeves, it is not correct to give the impression that somehow Luther and his fellow reformers were advocates of freedom of religion or proponents of those values that characterize modern democracy, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of assembly. They really weren't for any of those things. What they wanted in their communities was for God's truth to be preached and taught, and for errors and heresy to be suppressed. So preachers would preach against those things, but government officials would also take measures to suppress heresy. I mean, part of what they believed, different from today, is that religion was kind of a social glue. And if you had one government, you should have one religion. And people who in a Lutheran territory didn't want to go along with that, well, Luther wouldn't say throw them into prison, but he would say if they start preaching publicly or try to get people to depart from the truth, then they have to be dealt with by the political authorities. Now, none of that sounds very modern. None of that sounds like modern democracy. So when, you know, the movie tries to promote the idea that Luther is the father of any of these kind of notions that characterize our society, I just think that gives the wrong impression.
How do you think it did in at least, and it's hard to do this on film, especially one that's aimed at a broad population, broad viewership. How do you think it dealt with the theological controversies that Luther engaged in kind of outside the Lutheran circles?
Yeah, the big one that they deal with, and it's understandable, is Luther and the Catholics. And I think the presentation that you got in the first part of the film from the Cardinal Dolan about the problems in the church, at least in terms of corruption, was accurate. And then also later on, and I believe it was a Catholic theologian who observed that for Rome, the big question was who's in control, whereas for Luther, the big question was how can I find a gracious God, and that those two things came into conflict. Or to put it another way, in short, I think what they did in their description of Luther and Catholicism, Roman Catholicism, was okay. I thought that was adequate, maybe even more than adequate. When it came to Luther's debates and argument with non-Lutheran Protestants, there you didn't get nearly kind of the attention that a fuller account of Luther's life would have given. In particular, the bit with Zwingli over the Lord's Supper at Marburg Colloquy, that was okay. What, you know, they didn't go into Calvin and all that kind of stuff very much in depth. But when it came to the Anabaptists and the insistence on adult baptism or believer's baptism only, I'm not even sure that that got mentioned. And of course, in America, that form of Protestantism is really very, very significant. And it might have been useful for a modern audience to hear that Luther rejected that view of baptism as much as he rejected Zwingli's view of the Lord's Supper. The notion that you have to wait for somebody to be converted, and that means old enough to make up his own mind whether he wants to be baptized or not. Luther, as you know, just thought that was totally wrong. God has commanded us to baptize, and we're going to do it. And, you know, all the other things, children needing baptism, baptism forgiving sins. So the theology of baptism was something that was underplayed quite a little bit. Lord's Supper wasn't developed very much, but it got more attention than baptism. So that would be a place where I think, you know, the movie could have done better if they'd had a third hour, I guess.
We have 10 minutes left with Dr. Cameron McKenzie, and your questions and comments about the PBS film Martin Luther, The Idea That Changed the World. Our call-in number live this Tuesday afternoon, September the 19th, 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-6943. We have space at our Facebook fan page for your comments and questions as well. Facebook.com/issuesETC. Send us a tweet at issuesETC and our in-studio email address talkback@issuesetc.org. When we come back, we're going to talk about one of the aspects that I found fascinating, at least in a decision made about how to put the film together, and that is, and Dr. McKenzie had mentioned it early on, the decision to use only Luther's actual words.
If you're like me, you remember when education was about the basic skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic, and about reading great literature and history that gave our kids models of what it is to be a good person. Memoria Press's Classical Christian Curriculum is bringing this kind of education back. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Religious liberty, Christians engaging the media, the for you of Christianity, Christian marriage, the sexual revolution, the Benedict option. These are some of the topics for the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Registration is $120. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 10th and 11th in Houston.
You can teach lay people theology. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Deaconesses are women trained to share the gospel of Jesus Christ through works of mercy, spiritual care, and teaching of the Christian faith. The word deaconess means servant. Find out more on how you can serve in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod through the vocation of deaconess at lcms.org/deaconess. Working in faith, laboring in love, remaining steadfast in the hope of our Lord Jesus Christ. LCMS Deaconess Ministry, lcms.org/deaconess.
Celebrate the 500th anniversary of the Reformation with the new Martin Luther plush figure. It features the 16th century reformer holding the Bible and Luther's morning and evening prayers. Go to reformationgear.com, use the coupon code ISSUESETC, and 20% of your purchase will help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. ReformationGear.com, the new Martin Luther plush figure, ReformationGear.com, and enter the coupon code ISSUESETC. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Dr. Cameron McKenzie of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, about the PBS film Martin Luther, The Idea That Changed the World. Taking your questions and your comments as well, 1-877-623-6943. Our email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Our Twitter address, @issuesetc. And our Issues Etc. Facebook fan page, where we left space for your questions and comments on the Martin Luther film, facebook.com/issuesetc. facebook.com/issuesetc. Before we go to the phones, Dr. McKenzie, you had mentioned early on that there was a decision made in making the film to use only Luther's words. That can go one of two ways. It could either be fascinating or you could get Luther sadly out of context. How did it go with that?
I thought that was okay. I thought it was an interesting choice to make. When I watched the film, really now for the third time, I did notice one little exception to this, and that is toward the beginning, Luther's father actually says some words in English that you can understand, whereas I think almost through the entire rest of the film, anybody who speaks is speaking in a foreign language, so that normally you don't understand them. So clearly that's a device which they chose in order to highlight Luther's words, and I think that was not only interesting but probably a good choice. I mean, after all, what is it today that we would like people to think about or take away? It's what Luther had to say about the Christian religion. Of course, you know, the Bible's the standard, but what Luther had to say is often interesting, often provocative, and almost always itself comes out of the scriptures. So I like the decision. I'm sure other people didn't, but for me, that was fine.
Marilyn asks, did Martin Luther's writings on the Jews really spark Hitler's attention during the Holocaust? Was it? It was on the movie Martin Luther, The Idea yeah. That Changed the World.
Yeah, I didn't really comment on their trying to talk about Luther and his influence in the 20th century. And actually, I thought they handled Luther on the Jews reasonably well. It is true that the Nazis made use of some of Luther's writings on the Jews, because it's true that toward the end of his life, as one of the commentators point out, Luther had really had it with the Jews. He thought that now that the gospel was being preached and taught openly, that they should be responding to it and realizing that that was the truth about Jesus and not their traditional understanding, their Talmud, and all that kind of stuff. So that was correct, and the commentators did a nice job of saying that really the Nazis were exploiting what Luther had written. The Nazis did not have the same attitudes as Luther did. Luther's concern was entirely religious, not at all racial or ethnic. There were in his own lifetime Jews who had converted to Christianity, and Luther thought that was just fine. He wasn't concerned about the blood and all that kind of stuff. And again, I think the commentators did a good job of bringing these things out. So it's something that today especially makes us uncomfortable about Luther, but it is something that a lot of people know. And I guess in a film like this, it just wouldn't work very well to ignore it. Now, the truth is, of course, that that's only one way in which Luther has been influential over the centuries. And the movie didn't get into any of these other ways in which he has been influential. So if they had left that out entirely, it would have been okay with me. If you want to do a movie on Luther's influence, it would be a whole lot more than just Luther and the misuse of his writings by the Nazis.
Sandy listens in Omaha, Nebraska. A friend watched it and became interested in learning about Martin and Katie Luther and the Reformation. How would you recommend that I follow up with her? What's your recommendation, Dr. McKenzie?
Well, there are a couple of books that are currently available about Catherine von Bora, Katie Luther, that our own Concordia Publishing House makes available. So you can read books about her, and I think that if I were talking to somebody in my classroom, I would Google very quickly and get the names of those books. But I'd go to CPH and take a look at what they have, what they offer.
And speaking of that, we should mention, I'll give you more information on Dr. McKenzie's forthcoming book on the Reformation, probably another good place to begin if you'd like to introduce someone to a little more information. A quick question from Jordan Marshfield, Wisconsin. Will the Roman Catholic Church ever come to Luther's understanding of justification? What would Luther say if he saw the different denominations of Protestantism? Would he still have protested Rome, considering all the divisions in Christianity? A common question, about a minute to answer.
Yeah, sure. Clearly, as the film suggested, today's Catholic Church is not like the medieval Catholic Church, and they've adopted things that Luther advocated. It took him a few centuries, things like vernacular worship. But when it comes to theology, the heart of theology, for Luther, it's all about the gospel, the complete forgiveness of sins, reconciliation with God, freely given to us in the means of grace. And that's that freely thing that a lot of churches, Rome including, that have trouble with it. Now, you can also see the cult of the saints, purgatory, and all that stuff in the Roman church, but a lot of Christian denominations, including Rome, have just lots of trouble with this notion that God forgives sins on account of Christ without making any demands upon us for salvation. When we get on our deathbed, we don't want a pastor telling us, well, you really should have done this, this, and this. No, Christ has done this, this, and this. And that's the heart of Luther's gospel. And I hope and pray that it's still the heart of what you would hear in our Lutheran Church Missouri Synod pulpits Sunday after Sunday after Sunday.
Dr. Cameron McKenzie is professor and chairman of the Department of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. He's author of the forthcoming book, The Reformation. This is a book that I not only recommend, but I also recommend that you buy it early, because coming up on the 500th anniversary of the Reformation in October, it's going to be selling very, very fast. You can pre-order by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, a great way to introduce yourself in both sight and word to this time called the Reformation. 1-800-325-3040, or browse before you buy under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Dr. McKenzie, thank you very much for your time.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I enjoyed it. Thanks.
In Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., Pastor Peter Burfein joins us. You've heard people talk about themselves as being woke. What does that mean? We'll talk about the left woke ideology and Gnosticism with Pastor Peter Burfein. Then we'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson with Pastor Tom Baker on Elijah and the prophets of Baal.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth, Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.